It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions about plants and trees. But first, we spend a lot of time on this show talking about growing our own fruits and vegetables. Today, we're going to talk about going out and finding them. Mike Crabill of Keokuk is a retired educator and a veteran forager. He's been teaching people how to find wild edibles for 50 years. Mike, hello.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Now, how did this start for you?
Yul Gibbons stalking the wild asparagus probably kicked me into high gear. I was just fascinated by the book and had a hard time putting it down.
And was this something that you did as a kid, too? Did you go around and nibble on various edible things in your environment?
Always curious. And our parents had relatives in Donelson, Iowa, and we used to get together with our cousins and see who could pick up the most hickory nuts and the most black walnuts. And we had a prize of malted milkshake. So it's been a lifelong kind of interest, and as I said, kicked into high gear once I picked up Stalking the Wild Asparagus. I love the way Yul Gibbons talked about testing different kinds of foods and sampling them and experimenting with them, and it just struck a resonant chord.
And you started sharing this foraging with other people pretty early on as well. You've been teaching others how to do this for 50 years.
Yes, I did. I was first county naturalist and worked for the Blackhawk County Conservation Board in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and explored the different wild edibles there and did programs for youth and also for adults. And I carried that on as I became a school teacher, and we did experimenting skills, trying to find out the best way to produce Indian lemonade or sumac lemonade, as it's called, using the safe sumacs. And we researched that for 20 years and finally came up with an answer to make consistently good-looking sumac lemonade and consistently good-tasting sumac lemonade. I've done programs from Oregon to West Virginia and North Carolina. I was just up in Minnesota on tribal reservation this last week and did a program up there on bugs for breakfast. So it's not just edible wild plants, but sometimes insects, and made me think about Des Moines and all the cicadas that are cropping up there. I did take some up, and we made shish kebabs using cicadas. So, yeah.
Other than cicadas, what do you put on a shish kebab?
Oh, normal vegetables, things like red peppers and onions, and we marinated the cicadas overnight, so it softened them up a little bit, pulled the wings off, and they weren't bad. We did have some June bugs, however, and the June bugs had kind of a bitter taste, so I wouldn't go there again.
Okay. I'm making a note of that. So can you give me an idea, as someone who loves to forage for wild foods, how often do you go out foraging, and what kinds of things have you worked into your regular diet? Not shish kebabs, but
right.
Things that you actually eat on a regular basis.
Oh, it depends on the season, of course. When dandelions are abundant, and there are a lot of things that can be made from dandelions, from very healthy greens to using the roots to make an ice cream that's absolutely wonderful. It has kind of a coffee flavor. In addition, the flowers, if you remove the green, bitter-tasting receptacle right below the yellow flower, the flowers can be mixed into batters, and you can make breads or dandelion donuts. We often made dandelion donuts in school, and kids would go back home and make them at home for their siblings and parents and neighbors, and had a lot of fun with it.
It's I'm getting the impression from you that this is fun for you
to
go
out
and find these things. Is it more than that for you, though?
Well, yes. It's a challenge to continue to find out new things that you can use and boldly go where you've never gone before. It's an enjoyable family activity. I find kids are just eager to try something new. And, for instance, when dandelions are around, we love to get together in a big circle and spit yellow. We also have found that kids are very, very fond of yellow wood sorrel leaves. It's a little clover-like plant that has a heart-shaped leaflet and yellow flowers, and they're very sour. And so we have kids pair up and face each other and see who's the first to smile, because it's the sourness makes you smile. So I enjoy it. Right now, today, I have a friend over, and we're going to be making mulberry taffy. And that is a big hit always. And the recipe makes, probably 140 pieces of taffy. So once you put the time into it, you've got something that will last for a while.
Right. And I've got that recipe in front of me right here. And it's a mm-hmm. pretty basic thing. Sugar, cornstarch, corn syrup, 1 1/3 cups mulberry juice. How do you juice the mulberries?
There are a lot of ways you can juice them, from simply pressing them through a colander to squeeze out the juice. It's best to wear disposable gloves, otherwise you stain your hands.
Right, and keep it off your kitchen counters.
Yeah, exactly. But I have invested in Mayhu Lisa steamer. It's, I think, from Europe, Sweden, if I'm not mistaken. And it extracts the juice and leaves the mulberries behind. I tasted some of the mulberries that were left behind yesterday and found out that they actually were very good. The stems weren't noticeable because they were softened by the cooking process, the steaming process. So I'm going to try to use those in an ice cream this evening.
All right. So in addition to the mulberry juice, then butter, salt, lemon juice, and vanilla. So a very simple mm-hmm. recipe. And now, I know that there are lots of plants that you can find and use that are extremely nutritious. Mulberry taffy isn't going to bring a lot of extra nutrition into your life, but it's clearly something that particularly kids would enjoy. And I've done a little bit of this with my kids. I did a little bit of this when I was a kid. And uh-huh. the kind of joy that you see in a kid when they learn that they can eat things that are growing wild is almost difficult to describe. They love doing it. They love having that knowledge and being able to share it with other people. What makes this so special for kids, Mike?
I think it's the fact that it's daring and that, you know, they can astonish their friends. You mean you can eat that? We had some little girls that helped us out at the Wild Food Summit this past week when we were doing the bugs for breakfast sort of thing, and I had prepared some white chocolate chip cookies that had waxworms in them. And the girls, one of the girls picked them off, and I said, "They're in the batter." And she looked at me, and she said, "Oh, well." And she ate it, and she liked it. So those girls wanted to take them around and serve everyone that was up there at the Wild Food Summit. And I gave them a little container, and off they marched. And they would stand there after the person took the cookie and watch as the person ate it. And the person said, "That's good." You know, and the girls loved it, and off they'd run to another person. So I think it's that feeling that it's somewhat crazy, but it's a lot of fun, and it's surprisingly good. And that's also true of whether it's cinnamon black walnut ice cream or wild food trail bites that have wild ingredients in them, like mulberries, for instance, or black walnuts or hickory nuts. Kids are eager to try, and they don't mind if something's really sour or nasty tasting. They'll give it a whirl.
Now, it's not just for kids. I've spent a little time in a Facebook group called Midwest Wild Edibles and Foragers Society. And this is a closed group, but there's over 2,000 members. And these are grown-ups who want to learn more about recipes and medicinal uses for plants and just other ways that you can eat and find these wild edibles. Why do you think this is something that is attracting so much interest and growing interest among adults?
I think people are ready for foods that are local, foods that are fresh, no preservatives, top quality, no cost. They're ready to get out and connect with the outdoors again and learn more about nature. And it's exciting. It's a challenge. It's an adventure. It's, as I said, the Star Wars kind of thing. You're boldly going where you've never gone before. And it's a lot of fun. To do that. The interest in Facebook has just multiplied rapidly. When I joined that Midwest Wild Edibles and Foragers Society a few years ago, there were less than 400 people, and now there are 2,295, very close to 2,300. An edible wild plant group, which has people from all over the world, although most of them are in the United States, started out 4,000 just a few years ago, and now it's up to 27,277. So there's a worldwide interest in it. In fact, a friend sent me some information that Copenhagen's has the world's best restaurant. It's named Noma, and the chef, Rene Redzepi, has five full-time foragers that go out and collect local wild plants and mussels and things of that sort that they can make use of. He doesn't use garlic that has to be imported or many of the other things, but for instance, one of his things that he serves is white asparagus cooked with pine branches.
Oh, wow.
Which sounds so weird. But apparently people are intrigued and willing to pay and delighted by the food that's offered. I wanted to mention, if I could put in a real quick plug, I'm doing a three-day session called Wild Edibles of the Midwest. It's going to be in Webster City, Iowa, Briggs Woods Park. And people can go to www.legacylearningbrv.com. Moon River Valley is what it stands for, .org, and find out more about it.
We're out of time. Thank you so much. This is Talk of Iowa.
Absolutely. My pleasure.